and I'm Nicolas Véran, senior fellow at Bruegel, speaking on the backstage of the Bruegel annual meeting in Brussels. And it's my pleasure to do this podcast today with Jörg Kukies, Secretary of State in the German Federal Ministry of Finance, and the point person within the German government for all things financial markets, financial regulation, and many aspects of the Eurozone reform debate. Mr. Kukies, thank you for accepting this podcast. It's the first in our backstage series, and what we want to discuss today is the completion of the Eurozone reform agenda. What would it take to get the job finished? What is missing at the current stage? Can you give us a little bit of your thinking of what remains to be done?
Well, the most concrete proposals that we have on the table and that we are willing and able to agree very fast is the finalization of the so-called banking package, which would deepen the banking union and make sure that bail-inable debt is well-defined and quantitatively floored at 8% of minimum requirement for eligible liabilities, which would be a very, very substantial step towards harmonizing the capital requirements for banks and make sure that taxpayer and depositor risk is reduced quite substantially in case things go wrong with banks. The second thing is the definition and implementation of the common backstop for the Single Resolution Fund, where we think we can finalize one of the missing elements of the banking union, i.e. a fiscally neutral backstop for the resolution fund in case that there are substantial demands on bank resolution in a potential Eurozone crisis. We think having that instrument available as a backstop will also strengthen the cohesion of Europe and the Eurozone and make sure that Europe is ready to react to the next crisis. And last but not least, enhancing the instruments that the ESM has at its disposal. We are thinking of precautionary credit lines, enhancing the monitoring and implementation capacities and capabilities of the ESM to broaden the ESM's role into an instrument that is somewhat akin to the International Monetary Fund at a global level.
So a lot of this sounds very arcane to a lot of people. What we saw in the financial crisis was, especially in Cyprus, memorably, that depositors weren't protected the same way in small periphery member states as they were in the core. Is a package of reform that you have mentioned going to change that?
But that's exactly the point. Making sure that the, first of all, making sure that the banks have enough equity capital and subordinated capital to buffer losses in case they arise. We've seen many cases where that simply wasn't the case, and immediately the taxpayer or depositors were on the hook. So the more equity and bail-inable debt that you have on the balance sheets of banks, the less likely it is that the taxpayer or depositors will have to pay. So in that sense, that's a very real and tangible reform, even though minimum requirement for eligible liabilities sounds complicated. In fact, it means that taxpayers are better protected and depositors are better protected if and when something goes wrong with banks. So I think that's a very tangible element, even though it sounds complicated.
There's been a perception of double standards or unequal standards in the crisis. German banks early in the crisis have received a lot of support from the German taxpayer, and now countries in other parts of Europe are prevented by state aid rules and the Bank Recovery and Resolution Directive to apply the same toolkit to provide assistance to failing banks. Are you comfortable that if there is a problem in the German banking system in the future, there will be the same iron discipline as you just described for the European banking system in general?
Well, all of the cases where at the moment there are issues We are discussing about the privatization of HSH Nord Bank, for example, and there are very, very clear guidelines and rules on what the state can and cannot do in terms of resolving that. And we have to go to the commission for approval of everything that we do, just like anyone else in any member state. The German banks are as much subject to the single supervisory mechanism as the banks in all other member states. And that's exactly the reason why we are so in favor of European rulemaking and uniform rulemaking, because we don't want the appearance of any privileged or not privileged treatment of any banks in any member states. They all need the same instruments and the same rule set and the same single rule book, both if things go right and if they go wrong.
So every political leader in Europe at this point seems to rally to the buzzword of completing the banking union, but it seems enormously difficult in practice. You've mentioned a lot of the current agenda, but many other things, like simply establishing a common deposit insurance, seem a long way off. Can you explain why it's so difficult to complete the banking union, despite the fact that every political leader seems to accept the principle?
Well, I think one of the key issues is that we have different rules and regulations in all of the Eurozone member countries and in all of the EU member countries. So, you know, the complexity of having diverging and disparate insolvency regimes, both at the corporate level but also at the bank level, means that this whole question of what do you do if something goes wrong, treating that uniquely and uniformly, is a very complex and very complicated issue, especially because all of these topics became real and tangible when banks started withdrawing their lending capacity from a lot of the EU's member states in the financial crisis. So these things are not abstract or theoretical. They're very, very tangible. And how you set up a common rule set, that means that banks in Europe have a level playing field and access to provide capital to small, medium, and large companies in a uniform framework. I think that's one of the key competitive disadvantages that the European financial sector has versus the US and some Asian markets, that the domestic market in Europe is still very, very fragmented in the financial industry. And that's something we have to address in all sorts of subsets of decision making, starting from capital, but also going to insolvency regimes, to regulatory regimes, to exemptions, et cetera, et cetera.
So indeed, let's move to the defragmentation agenda, and from banking to capital markets union, which has been a big, at least rhetorical, project of the current commission. One of the key pieces of legislation is a so-called ESA review, and that jargon for creating a more integrated supervisory framework for capital markets, which in turn would be a catalyst for defragmentation. There's a widespread perception in the discussions that Germany is not enthusiastic about ESA's review. Can you give us a sense of what exactly is at stake, and is there a chance that this legislation gets approved in the current term?
I think there is a good chance of getting approval. In fact, we're having discussions today and tomorrow on specifically this topic, because we definitely want an agreement. There's just a widespread sense, and this is not a Germany versus anyone issue, it's a very broad consensus, that the details of the ESA reform are still very far away from where we can get consensus on many, many issues. One of the things that we want to make sure is that there is a balance between the national competent authorities' quick and immediate decision making, where issues are relevant at the national level, and making sure that we only pass the responsibilities to the European level, where there is a unique control and a uniform governance as well. Having both at the table complicates things and makes rules and regulations more complex and burdensome and not easier. So finding the right balance between what we delegate to the European ESAs and what we leave with the national competent authorities is a quite complex thing. And by the way, that's the same in many of the large economies that have uniform banking rules. It's not like there's everything done at the national level there either. So I think that's a balance that we have to strike, and there is still work to be done to get conclusions on that. But you know, we have several months ahead of us that that hopefully we can find a compromise.
One thing we almost never mention in debates about how to get the Eurozone to work is Brexit. It's often as if it didn't exist. How will Brexit impact all this debate about the European financial system, banking union, and capital markets union?
Well, first of all, it has a massive debate on the relative weighting of Eurozone member countries versus those countries that haven't adopted the euro. 85% of EU GDP will be produced by the Eurozone. So obviously the weighting of euro area members increases quite substantially. On the other side, of course, it's a incentive, but also a requirement that the capital and the services rendered by the City of London and the United Kingdom are still maintained while as we go through this transfer. So setting up the right rules that are compliant with the EU's for freedoms and way of functioning, but also not disrupting the financing of our real economy, will be the massive challenge that we're all facing. And it's a balance between making sure that the right infrastructure moves to the Eurozone, but at the same time allowing the capital still to flow freely across the globe.
Let me get this right. Are you saying that the Eurozone cannot afford to lose the city?
Well, I think the city is and will remain a very, very important pool of capital, and therefore large corporations, even medium-sized corporations, have an interest, at least that's what they tell us when we speak to them, to maintaining some sort of an agreement, avoiding a hard Brexit, that will allow the financing capabilities that are at the moment in London to continue to be provided for the real economy across Europe.
But if a hard Brexit happens, is Europe ready?
I think that, I mean, that's something that we continue to tell the private sector, which has as its main responsibility to get ready for Brexit. We've been elaborating that there is a risk of a hard Brexit for many, many months now. So I think what we're seeing for us in our role in the supervision and regulation of the financial sector, there's huge amounts of resources being dedicated to Brexit preparedness. So we're confident that there will be Brexit preparedness, but there is still a lot of work to do, and financial sector participants have to be very clear that there is a risk that this will happen, and they have to and are stepping up their level of intensity to get ready.
Another thing that gets discussed a lot in the financial community is new technology, fintechs, the disruptions that can come with it. Is it, in your view, a game changer, or just one other wave of transformation like there have been many in the past?
No, it's truly transformational. If you look at the impact on the banking system, the insurance system, the asset managers, it's a massive, massive impact, both in terms of competitive threat, but also in terms of opportunity for collaboration and deepening the digitization of the existing incumbent business model. So I think the fintech area can be interesting, both in terms of an opportunity to increase revenues, decrease costs, but also as a healthy competitive stimulation to the financial markets.
Jörg Kukies, State Secretary at the Federal Ministry of Finance of Germany, thank you so much for being the first to initiate this backstage series of podcasts at Bruegel.